Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Go, 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 and on the count of three. Go, 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 and on the count of three. There is a little bar hidden in the back of a tailor shop in Montreal called the Cloakroom, and it's consistently lauded as one of the best bars in North America. It's awarded by Tales of the Cocktail, or at least nominated. I mean, it's one of those places that, you know, keeps winding up on everybody's list. And Andrew Whibley, the owner, is someone I recently got to talk with, and he doesn't really talk about that too much. He also would not call himself a DJ, despite the fact that he played records at several hip-hop parties back in the day. So I think this is someone who underplays the awesomeness of his accomplishments and his bar's accomplishments. So let's sit down and have a chat with Andrew and talk about the Cloakroom, hip-hop, their upcoming personalized Cloakroom Amaro, which sounds amazing, and more.
Yeah, so my name is Andrew Whibley. I'm one of the owners of the Cloakroom Bar in Montreal. We're also redoing the old Dominion Square Tavern as we speak, which should be open in the next couple of months. And yeah, here I'm definitely in charge of the beverage program kind of overall. And then I also deal with kind of everyday management stuff. And funny enough, the music falls into my category of stuff to take care of as well. And yeah, Cloakroom Bar, just to give you a little breakdown of it, if you're unfamiliar with it, it's a small speakeasy in downtown Montreal. We only have 25 seats. We were recently named the second best bar in Canada on Canada's 100. And we're also the 35th best bar in North America on North America's top 50. So it's a great little spot. We get a lot of locals, tourists, and definitely it's like a cocktail aficionado place. Mm-hmm. We work without a menu. So we have like a pretty big bar program that's kind of designed to cater for that. And then we also kind of focus on spirits. So we have like the biggest bourbon collection in Canada. We have a lot of vintage bourbon, vintage spirits, vintage Amaro, all that kind of stuff that plays into our bar program. So it's a lot of stuff for probably like a 430 square foot bar.
I was about to say, that sounds like you're shooting really high for such a tiny little spot, but it sounds like you really can accommodate anyone who walks through the door.
Yeah, we try. I mean, working without a menu, it was, so we've been open for almost 8 years, and back then there wasn't as much of a cocktail culture in Montreal. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like a good way to kind of introduce people to cocktails and just kind of ask what they like or what they're in the mood for, and then kind of go from there. And then, it kind of just evolved, and we've added and kind of tweaked things and made things better over the years. And the vintage stuff, it was, well, it kind of started, I think, with bourbon. We ended up getting a few high-end bourbons probably back in maybe like 2016 or 17 or something like that. And clients really responded to that. And then we started to expand that collection. Around that time too, I visited a few bars in Chicago that had some vintage stuff. And I kind of started looking into how to purchase that and how to get my hands on that. And we built out a whole program over about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then we're able to kind of launch it, I think, in 2019 or maybe end of 2018. And it's definitely taken on. It's just like a nice little kind of like value add to the bar. Most people, it's the cocktails and our entry level or whatever you want to call it, cocktails. That's kind of what most people go for. But if they want to indulge and have something that they've never had before, or go crazy with high end stuff or vintage or whatever it is, then we kind of have everything covered.
That's amazing. So you yourself, though, I mean, this is pretty. I mean, to venture into not having a menu and specializing in vintage. Vintage spirits, you yourself obviously must have a deep, deep, deep love as one of the owners here for cocktails, spirits, etc. So when did you get started and how? So this is the what's your journey question. How did you get to this point where you're such a nerd about all of this stuff that you've been able to carve out this very like amazing educational niche, you know, in your city?
Yeah, I've been bartending. I've been working in hospitality since I was 18, started as a busboy and then kind of like worked my way up from there. And then at one point I left for about a year and a half and just in another industry and ended up getting laid off and came back. And that's when I kind of started on the bar. So it would have been around maybe like 25 or so. Mm-hmm. And back then there wasn't that much cocktail stuff in the city. The bar manager at the place I was working at was a guy called Manny. Manny Vides, who's still a bartender in the city, it runs a few places on the South Shore. And I kind of saw like what he was doing a little bit and kind of like was intrigued, I think, a lot with like the flavors and stuff like that. So I just started kind of exploring it. Also at that point, like it was, I was sort of at that, like, do I make a career out of this or do I not? So I decided I wanted to make a career out of it. And I kind of looked at how to do that. And I think by becoming an expert in something, it's probably the best way. So I just started learning kind of as much as I could about cocktails, spirits, all that stuff. And yeah, that I just kind of like was went pretty crazy over it for a few years. I did like a lot I was bartending, obviously. Then I kind of worked my way up to be like head bartender or manager at a few spots, and also did like a lot of competitions. Quite a few over, that was probably in like 2015, 2016, was lucky enough to like win a bunch of them and travel and meet people and stuff like that, which kind of also pushed me in the right direction as well. So
that's amazing. Yeah, so basically you just got obsessive pretty early on.
Yeah. It was just like, working in hospitality for so long, it's just like, yeah, how do I kind of make a career out of this? And I didn't want to be a cook, obviously. I didn't want to be a som. I don't like managing. So I think having fun behind the bar was the easiest way to do it.
Kind of the one. Yeah. Well, in those early days, what were some of your initial obsessions, in a sense? Or maybe just the ones you got fascinated with? Was it rum? Was it, I mean, you say now that you guys have a lot of bourbons and whiskeys there. Was that something that you latched onto early on, or was it something else?
Yeah. For me, it was bourbon and American whiskey from the get-go. Like back then too, in Montreal, there wasn't a whole lot available. There was really only like the Beam kind of portfolio. Mm-hmm. And so we had like a handful of them, but like, there wasn't that much. And also it was like, I remember like starting to learn about cocktails and stuff and like the learning that like American rye is very different from Canadian rye. That was kind of, and you couldn't get any American rye at that point. So I would go to the States and buy them and bring them back and taste them and kind of make cocktails like that and have fun with it. So yeah, it's definitely always been American whiskey for me as a passion. And then also it's kind of like evolved into Amaro and vermouth and stuff like that as well.
I was going to say, you also mentioned the Amaris, and I'm like, that is such a vast category. I'm sure that can keep you entertained for years.
Yeah, it's I mean, one of my business partners here is Italian. Actually, well, they both are, but we always just use them. So also part of the way that our bar program works here is that we don't really have a lot of it's really like a different program from a lot of places. So we don't do like syrups and purees and all that kind of stuff. It's either like a handful of fresh ingredients. A lot of our flavors and stuff come from the back bar. So amaros and bitters and all that kind of stuff. There's so much flavor that's packed into there. And if you're building your cocktails correctly, they come through like so well. So it always was like a part of our back bar here, and then it just kind of expanded into the vintage stuff. Now also, like, we make three amaros in-house, and then we have another one. Actually, I have a bottle.
I like it when the visual aids come in.
It's actually not planned. It's just we just got a few samples in, but this you can see that that's like
It's an
the
Amaro. Oh, you guys are making your own Amaro, cloakroom Amaro. So that's something that if someone is visiting the cloakroom in Montreal, they can try it. But are you going to be able to sell it in any markets as well?
We'll be getting it into a few other bars and restaurants first, ours as well. We did a super small run of it. And then we'll see
That's
if it
amazing.
turns into something, then it'll turn into something. But it was almost out of necessity because in Quebec, all the spirits are run by the SAQ, which is like our government run liquor stores, and they're not great at doing their jobs. So we're always running out of product. It's a weekly thing for basically, if you could ask any bar manager from here. And it's always niche products too.
Yeah, that makes sense though. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, that happens here in the States also.
I mean, I just it's like it's real bad here. Like it's like you'll
Oh.
and that's why we started making them in-house. At a point, it was just like I need like something to fill those categories. And then this one, it's a small distillery up in northern Italy in like Piemonte called Rivero. And we went there actually like a few years ago, met with them and did a bunch of tastings and stuff like that. So this is fits kind of the category of like your Montenegro kind of style. So a little bit lighter,
Yum.
like more floral, and just works really well in like a lot of cocktails. So we decided to do batches of it to compensate for the lack of Montenegro, lack of Nonino, and lack of other ones within that category. And we just got a few of them in, and then the rest of the orders should be coming in like a month or so.
You just rattled off a whole lot of names of Amaros that I love. They're delicious, so delicious. That's really amazing. I'm sure when you first started, you didn't see yourself having a hand in creating an Amaro in your future.
No.
When you first started bartending, what kind of spots were you bartending at in the early days?
Early days, it was so nightclubs, nightclubs, and then so before that too, I worked in fine dining, and then
Oh, okay.
did a little bit of nightclubs and stuff like that. There was one of the first like long-term kind of bar jobs I had. I was there for like a year and a half. Was it was on like a it's kind of like a party pub that was doing cocktails on the South Shore with Manny. And then after that I went back to fine dining before here. And then also did another I managed a nightclub kind of for like about a year leading up to it, or the bar at a nightclub. And it was Montreal, it's evolved so much in the last like I'd say 10 years or so. We've been open for 8. There's like Atwater Cocktail Club, Cold Room, Mal Necessaire. Most of the bars from Montreal that you've like maybe heard of or probably heard of, they've been open around the same time of us, a little bit before, a little bit after. So it kind of like it was all starting at the same time. And before that, there wasn't very many. There's a few spots like the Lab and Distillery were doing cocktails, but it wasn't really the style of stuff that I was like into as much. I never worked at any of those places, but those were kind of there's a few places, and then the kind of movement started probably around like 7 or 8 years ago, around the time that we opened.
That's really interesting. I mean, first, I find it interesting that you kind of kept finding yourself in fine dining. So that makes me think that you were making at least classic cocktails and kind of perfecting that. But what do you think it was that made this wave happen kind of for everyone at the same time? I mean, that this many spots opened up within the same year or so.
I don't know. I mean, I think it was just probably like, yeah, it just happened. I think the kind of community maybe started to like mature a little bit and see, you know, like most of the people that open those places are maybe around the same age as me or so. And
makes sense.
We're probably had a similar path or similar trajectory to me as me. So that probably contributed to it. But yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, if like also, well, Montreal too, like we have a really big wine culture. So there's a lot of great wine bars, restaurants that have like incredible wine programs here. And I would say Montreal is probably like in the forefront of that, maybe even globally. But the cocktail stuff has always just been like a little bit behind like New York or Chicago or Toronto and stuff like that. So we kind of are just catching up and yeah, just a few years behind. So that's why around that, like probably like, yeah, 2014, 2015 was when it really started to take off.
Well, it sounds like you guys all quit the nightclubs around the same time to do something a little more grown up. Yeah.
Yeah. And then now we're all pretty old and definitely don't go to the nightclubs anymore.
That actually relates to the music, because I'm sure you had way more tolerance to the music at the nightclub when you were younger. And so today you were saying that you are you oversee the music programs too for a couple of your spaces. So are you yourself, I mean, if it fell to you, your partners and such must have known that you were the music guy.
not even
Really?
So Cloakroom, it was like, I was so young. I was 29 when I opened it.
Wow.
And
that's really impressive. That's really impressive. I mean, that's young to open up your own business, and especially one like this in hospitality.
So. Yeah. And I was just like, I'm pretty eager to do things sometimes, and maybe.
And taking on music was one of those things.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning, we just had playlists that we would put on, and then there was a little bit of like, maybe some of the partners didn't see eye to eye on like what was being played. And then for me personally, like music has always been a pretty big part of my life. When I was like 17, 18, I wanted to be a DJ and was just going and buying records like nonstop in the record stores. It was like a year or two before Serato came out. So everything was like, we were going to do parties with like our crates and stuff like that. And there wasn't really like, anything else that we could do. So, the DJ career failed. I never pursued it, but it was always kind of like a passion of mine. And then, when we opened here, it was kind of figuring out the vibe of the room and stuff like that. It was a work in progress a little bit at the beginning. And then once it kind of like got settled, and that's sort of when I started taking over the music. And for me, it was a lot of my influences, which is mainly in hip hop. And also just with the feel, because like, so Cloakroom, it's I don't think I mentioned it, but we don't call it this, but people would classify it or categorize it as a speakeasy. The door is hidden, and we're kind of affiliated with a suit shop, and we're kind of like on the side of it, and it's the same entrance. It definitely gets thrown into the speakeasy category, and I refer to us as like a small high-end cocktail bar. And my inspirations were more from places that like I would visit in New York, and you know, like Attaboy and
PDT
PDT, like all those places back in like the early 2010s. So it was like, for me anyway, it's like my inspiration is more that it's a lot less like, I don't know, electro swing or whatever, or speakeasy. It was more like that New York kind of vibe. So I just started kind of like putting that stuff on a few playlists, and then people started to respond to it, and it just kind of like created the vibe of the venue sort of on its own. Then I've just kind of built it out from there, and it's become like a pretty big part of it. And I was having a conversation about this like a few weeks ago with a friend, and it's like, for me, it's like, I know I could do cocktails pretty well. So like when clients like say it's the best cocktail they've ever had or something like that, it's obviously, I take it as a big compliment. But whenever anyone says like, yo, the playlist is like the best or like something, that hits me more. I'm like, more proud of it and more happy. I'm like, Yeah, it almost like excites me. It's like a different level of excitement.
I totally get that. So I grind and stay focused. If I was any hotter, I drink straight vodka, spit out flames and piss lava. That hot, fam, try again. That's why I got hoes like firemen. You can plug them up to hydrants. I should push a big red truck with sirens. Got a flow that'll stop beginners. I'm all y'all like a shopping center. Every time I yell, I say, J, Detroit, I to the LLA with J. J, to the LLA, J. What would someone expect to hear when they walk into the speakeasy? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say the speakeasy. The cloakroom. The cloakroom. Well, we kept saying the word and it got stuck in my brain.
Yeah.
So that door opens and you've created a whole new environment for them once they
leave
the tailor
shop. Sure. And it's also a cool kind of like sort of evolution for the client as well. Like we do have a lineup most nights of the week. And then so there's a kind of a little lobby waiting room. You come in and once the host kind of brings you in, it switches from this like old kind of like wood lobby into this like dark low ceiling hallway kind of that pulls you into the room. Mm-hmm. And that's where the music kind of like really starts. Early we play a lot of like it's a lot of like beat kind of hip-hop stuff, so a lot of like J Dilla and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then as the night kind of progresses, it goes into a lot of like kind of old school stuff, and that'll switch sort of depending on my mood a little bit. Sometimes it's like really older, sometimes it's a little bit newer. Recently it's been a lot of like, I don't know, Common and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Again, a lot of like Dilla stuff, but like more of the rap kind of comes in later in the night. And then, like that kind of like late 2000, like 8, 9, 10 kind of stuff we play a lot. But yeah, I have like different kind of moods for all sorts of stuff. Sometimes like I'm not a DJ, but it's like, I kind of go.
But you are a DJ. I don't think you should discount that for yourself. You are.
Yeah. I'll like take like sometimes like recently, like it was like Southern rap and. So I just started like a lot of like Outkast and like, I don't know, Goody Mob and like stuff like that. And then just kind of taking those sounds and connecting them to a lot of like West Coast stuff that was even a little bit older. And it kind of had just like similar, like, I guess like instruments or sounds or whatever that were coming through, and kind of like made a bunch of playlists that were fit that zone. And then, so it's a little bit all over the place, but definitely like very hip hop forward.
That, you know, I mean, what you're saying is not something that someone who doesn't DJ or love music, a lot of people wouldn't consider that. You know, you're listening to it and you're getting vibes from it. You're hearing like instrumentation that can relate to each other. And I've always said a DJ, you know, there's the wiki wiki whack DJs, you know, that are doing mixing and all that stuff. Yeah. But DJ too is creating this mood and creating a vibe. And you have to have an understanding of what you're playing in order to do that. And that's exactly what you're describing to me. So you can say you're a DJ. So when you, before Serato, when you were like buying all the records and wanted to DJ, was it all hip hop? Is that what you wanted to DJ out?
Yeah. It's always been that for me.
You had to have DJed parties and stuff at least.
Yeah, we did for sure.
Okay, cool.
When I was probably like 17, 18.
And that's
awesome. It was like a nightmare because I didn't have a car and like your parent, you're trying to carry like
hundreds
of records and it was just, but we had a few friends that were kind of into it too. And for me, honestly, it was like, it got too expensive. And it was like, I was
vinyl's a pricey habit.
Well, so during the pandemic, it was funny. Cause I had all my records in my apartment still. And then I moved them out of my apartment into my storage unit just like because I wanted to kind of like get rid of some clutter and stuff like that and kind of rearrange. And then we had a lot of lockdowns in Canada, but one of the later ones, I was like, okay, maybe I'll just like kind of throw these on like Kijiji or Facebook Marketplace and see what I could get for them. And I ended up making like a ton of money. Like,
oh, wow.
I sold like probably 90% of my records just on Marketplace. And some of them were like $150. Some of them were like less. I wasn't trying to like, I don't know, grade them and stuff like that. I was just doing a little bit of research and being like, look, like it's not maybe in perfect condition, kind of it's sold as is, whatever. And ended up doing that. And it it got a little bit annoying because people are super picky, and like I yep. was like, it's like, you know, they were like kind of like busting balls a little bit, and
that's what anybody does online when they're making sales.
Yeah. Hip hop people were cooler, but I also had like some rock records and like jazz records and stuff like that, and those yeah. people were so brutal. And I ended up like just getting, I had sold like most of them, and then a good friend of mine who is a DJ in the city, him and his brother, they have like they run like a label that has a bunch of DJs on them.
Yeah.
Anyway, they opened up a little cafe around that time. That's super cool. It's called Got Soul Cafe, and they have like a vinyl listening room in it. They have DJs sometimes on the weekends. They do a lot of events there. They sell shoes too, because both the brothers are really involved in like the sneaker kind of game.
I was gonna say, it sounds like a sneaker thing. Yeah.
So I just like gave my buddy like the last, I don't know, 20 or 30 records, and was like, just put them in your shop. And then ended up, he paid for a few golf games, and I didn't. And there that was you it. Go. That was the exchange. Yeah.
Hey, and it sounds like you can visit those records if you want to, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think they sold them. I hope they sold them.
Oh.
But yeah.
So, well, that means you kept some. So you said you got rid of like 90%, huh? You know, that happens when you have to move. I used to have thousands of records. I probably just have a few hundred now, you know, at this point. I feel that pain of, you know, lugging that stuff around. But I'm curious as to what kind of things you kept. Do you remember what the first record was that you bought?
The first record I bought, I can't remember that. I can tell you the first album I ever bought.
Yeah.
And I was definitely way too young to do it. the first album I ever bought was the Wu-Tang Clan 36 Chambers of Death. And that would have been, I think, 94, 95. So I would have been 9 or 10 years old. And somehow my parents let
me. You got a little money. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And even though it was like definitely like parental advisory and all that stuff, and they let me listen to it, and that kind of like sparked, I guess, like my love for hip-hop. There was also like little phases back then of like some punk stuff that I would listen to. But yeah, I grew up in kind of like an interesting area in Montreal, so there was a lot of like kind of rap and hood influences in that area, and that definitely comes through with even what I listen to now.
So it wasn't unusual, that was just part of your culture, was growing up with, you know, hip-hop all around you. I mean, hip-hop obviously, as everyone is touting, it's the 50th anniversary of hip-hop, 50 years of hip-hop, so it's been around for a while. I think it's an undeniable, you know, social thing, and everyone grew up with hip-hop at this point, you know. Even our parents got forced to grow up with hip hop. Like your parents who let you get Wu-Tang, which I love that. Have you thanked them for that to this day?
I don't know if I ever thanked them. I don't know if they realized, but like it was definitely. And one funny thing about that was like we kind of in elementary school, so we're in Canada, it goes up to grade 6, and I remember playing the Wu-Tang record at our grade 6 graduation, and parents like freaking out at a certain song, and then that got cut. But
and there was that's so funny. They're like, oh wait, this is what we just let them buy, god damn it. That's amazing. Well, then a question I like to ask people is about pairings, and that's musical and cocktail pairings, or just using your musical inspiration to build a cocktail or something. You know, if you've had these things happen, like you're like, okay, what's your Wu-Tang drink? You know, did you ever get like, okay, I'm going to make a drink and I'm going to name it after, you know, this Dilla song, you know, has that happened to you during the course, since you get to just make, I mean, I know when there's no menu, a lot of times you guys have a lot of ideas of how to fulfill someone's wish. You know, if they come to you and say, oh, I love agave and I don't want something spicy, boom, boom, boom. You have a couple things ready, I'm sure, when someone asks for that. But have you had that chance to create something?
For pairing, I mean, not as much. It would kind of, it would be like a,
that could even just be for you at home. Like, what are you listening to when you're having a drink, you're sipping on it tomorrow and you're listening to what, you know, that could just be your pairing.
Yeah. One of them, well, I made a drink for Snoop Dogg once, and it was a twist on a Corpse Survivor, but I told him it was just like a gin and juice, and he laughed at that. So that was like a kind of little That's premeditated cool. sort of pairing, but that was more for the individual and rather
of course.
Than the
That's great the though. Sound. I love that.
yeah, like pairings are well, actually, this is what I'll say about that. It's like So when I used to do like competitions and stuff like that, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. And one of the things that I remember doing once when I was in the world class national final a long time ago, we had to do like a food pairing thing. And one of the dishes was super spicy. So I went for something for like contrast. So I went for something that was, I think it was like a riff on a kind of a Ramos. And the idea was kind of like you have like a really spicy thing. And then you know, if you go to like a Indian restaurant, they'll give you that like yogurt drink.
Yeah,
kind of
thing, I was gonna say like, something creamy. Thing, right?
Exactly. So I went and did something like that. So for contrast, that's something that I that stands out to me, I think, at Cloakroom. Especially because it is this fancy like speakeasy, you know, we're right between the Ritz-Carlton and the Four Seasons, and like there's kind of a little bit of this, like a lot of people come in maybe with a little bit of like a judgment on what we're going to be and whatever, but then when they come in and they have this like kind of cool like hip-hop vibe, it's a contrast from the drinks that they're getting, which are going to be a little bit more on the fancy side and a little bit more like that. So that would be my overall pairing answer.
Yeah. Well, that's actually great because, you know, you come in and you hear like hip hop, which is so familiar. It's everywhere. And I think it's immediately disarming, right? So someone's not going to come in and feel like, oh, this is a pretentious place. And exactly. And even if they see, well, don't see the menu, realize how they do it, it does make it feel a little more accessible, probably.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. So you yourself, though, what are you listening to at home while you're sipping on something? Or do you even, are you one of those, I get home and I don't even look at booze?
I don't drink very often. Definitely not at home very often. but I was like, yeah, my actual like personal taste in music is kind of all over the place. It is still rooted in hip hop. I listen to right now, it's a lot of there's a rap group from upstate New York called Griselda that is like super grimy, like it's almost like hurts your ears when you listen to it. But I just like really enjoy it. It reminds me, I think, a lot of like Wu-Tang and a lot of those earlier kind of like mid-90s or whatever rap that I was listening to. And yeah, it has it's just like a certain element of like realness to it. Obviously, like the subject matter is like about, I don't know, dealing drugs and all sorts of stuff like that, which I don't do. But it kind of like, I don't know, there's just this like, there's a feeling to it that it kind of, I like. And then it's all over the place and it goes through little cycles too. I'll listen to like right now I never listened to a lot of it before, but I'm listening to a lot of Lil Wayne. Old stuff like Carter 2. It kind of just like hypes me up when I'm like walking around. It kind of gives me like an energy that I like. Then I'll also listen to phases where it's like weird, like funky kind of music and super hipster stuff. And then it's really all over the place.
That's awesome. Well, that's again true DJ, because that's how you're able to make those connections, you know, between like the jazz stuff or the alternative stuff or whatever that might have everything's got steel drums. What are these three songs?
So for the new place we're opening to, like Dominion, I haven't fully decided what type of music I'm gonna play, because I wanted to go more into like kind of like a rock style a little bit. It's like a big kind of like old tavern, and I was like, so a lot of like kind of bluesy rock, so like Black Keys and stuff like that, but then a lot of old stuff that kind of has similar sounds in it as well, so completely different from the music here. And I did like a bunch of playlists and was like working on it, and then a few weeks ago I was in Los Angeles and I went to a restaurant called Mother Wolf, which is like it's this big space and they were playing hip-hop, and I was just there and I'm like, oh, like I like the feeling, and there's such a big space with such high speed ceilings, because it's not a similar space, but the height of the ceilings and kind of maybe the vibe a little bit I was like, I kind of want this feeling when you walk into the new place.
Yeah.
So I'm still not 100% sure. I'll play around with it, but that, yeah, for a few weeks, I was basically just listening to like rock and roll, like a lot of old stuff from like the 70s or 80s, and then like a little bit of newer stuff, like, yeah, like White Keys, or sorry, Black
Black
Keys, like
Keys.
Jack White,
Yeah.
that was the other one in my head, like that stuff, like,
Well,
yeah.
I don't think it hurts to be prepared for either eventuality. You know, as soon as everything's built out
Yeah.
in there, then you just hit the playlist and see which one works, you know, because some that
Exactly.
space does dictate it. I totally understand that. You know, I used
Yeah.
to do music for a lot of restaurants and bars, and they'd be like, well, this is what we were thinking. And I'm all, tell me what you how it's built. You know, if I hadn't seen the
Yeah.
place yet, I'm like, okay, you're telling me you've got copper ceilings and you want me to play like New Orleans jazz stuff. I'm like, I can tell you right now that's going to sound real painful. You know,
Yeah.
because sometimes
Yeah.
that dictates it as well. I'm like, it's called brass for a reason. It's going to like, you know, so you kind
For
of play
sure.
around with those kind of things too, but there's a lot to consider. And then mood, of course, you know.
Yeah.
So
Well, that was
that's
actually one
awesome.
of so we the venue, it's been there for almost 100 years. And it's been shut down since COVID, and then we took it over, and we're redoing like not that much. It's a historical venue, so and that means that we're not allowed to touch a lot of the stuff, like the floors, a lot of the stuff on the walls, and like whatever. So we're leaving it pretty much like original, but like I think we had the sound company come in, and we just jammed like as many sound panels on the ceiling as possible to try to dampen the sound out of, because with high ceilings, like, not a lot of other things to dampen in there, so we had to kind of do
It would be
that.
a cacophony otherwise. So when are you guys shooting to have it's Bar Dominion? Is the new one, and you're shooting to have that open October-ish, something like
Hopefully a
that.
bit sooner. Yeah, we're aiming like I mean it look it's I've done a handful of openings in my career, and this one is definitely not behind schedule yet. I've seen
But you
stuff,
never know.
but you never know. We'll see. It's everything. A lot of stuff is supposed to be delivered this week and next week and be installed and stuff like that. So without any hiccups, we're hoping middle to end of September. And if not a little bit later, but like the floor's already there, the walls are there, like most of the stuff is already there. It's like we're redoing the furniture to give a little bit of a different feel. Like lighting, a bit of the sound stuff, and some kitchen stuff, but it's not like a massive renovation or anything, so it should line up
Should
okay.
be okay. Well, this is probably a good point to wrap things up so that you can throw out the socials so that people who want to follow along and see when Bar Dominion is opening, they know where to go. So
Yeah.
any socials you want to throw off for any of your spots or yourself, just go for
Uh, I'm horrible with this stuff.
it. You're like, wait, where's my social media person?
I believe, well, I'm the social media person too, but I'm just horrible at it. I think so. Mine is just my name, so it's Andrew_Ridley. I believe Cloakroom is the Cloakroom Bar,
Okay.
and I believe Dominion is just Bar Dominion,
Bar
and maybe the
Dominion.
Bar Dominion MTL. It might be
Okay.
Bar Dominion MTL.
I'll double check before this goes live and let
Yeah,
people
maybe
know, but but that's perfect.
I
It's
should have
okay.
known that. We haven't fully started pumping the Dominion stuff yet, and then the Cloakroom one, it's a pretty basic like Instagram page. We try to, like, we'll communicate a little bit of stuff with our clients, kind of show a little bit of like some products and stuff like that that we have. If you're a bourbon fan or a Marrow fan or vintage fan, you'll see a little bit of our collection and stuff on there. And then yeah, Dominion, we still haven't done a photo shoot yet because
Well, it's not quite
the kit
ready.
stick it's not ready.
Yeah.
So
So people need to
soon
follow
it's
so they know when to pop in there.
exactly.
Well, that's perfect. Thank you
Exactly.
so much, Andrew, for talking with me today. It's so great to get like an eye into what is happening in Montreal, a place where I need to get to, but there's so many places in this world, and I would love to
Yeah.
be up there and visit and see what this scene is all
For
about.
sure.
So
Yeah,
thank you
you gotta
so
come up
much.
and yeah,
Yeah,
and
one of these days.
if you like food and drink, Montreal
I
is the
love
place to
food
be.
and drink. That's not a
Yeah.
problem. Well, grab my nut, get school. Here comes my shout, let's down. True, BABBYU to my crew with the. Yeah. Come on, baby, baby, come on. Baby, come on, baby, baby, come on. Yo, the best protect your neck. So head on over to Instagram and look at
The Cloakroom Bar. There are multiple ones, but they are the only one that is just the Cloakroom Bar. And it's in Montreal, so make sure you get the right one. Thank you so much, Andrew, for talking with me, and I cannot wait to get my hands on some of that Cloakroom Amaro whenever it comes out. Crossing my fingers that I can get it here in California, or I might just have to go visit. And you all should make sure that you head over to the Music and Booze with Mo Spotify page so that you can check out Andrew's playlist, because it's really good. I'll just leave it right there. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search SheBMO on Spotify, SHEBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.